This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The 2016 presidential election sparked a conversation about the disconnect between rural and urban communities in Wisconsin. But this divide doesn't just apply to politics. Businesses in the region also face unique challenges because of their rural locations. Joining us to talk about how businesses are bridging the gap between rural and urban are Anne O'Connor, Director of Public Affairs at Organic Valley in Lafarge, Larry Klintz, General Manager of McPherson Guitars in Sparta, and Tessa Conroy, Economic Development Specialist for University of Wisconsin Extension. So, Anne, I want to first have you start by, you know, kind of giving a brief summary of how Organic Valley got started. I mean, I think Organic Valley is a big example of a national business that's based right here in our region. And so just, you know, talking about how you guys got started in a rural area like Lafarge.
Well, Organic Valley is a farmer-owned cooperative, and we've been around for 30 years this year. We started out of the crisis of the farm crisis in the 1980s, when farmers were not making it, farms were folding, families were in crisis, and seven farmers got together and said, you know, there's got to be a better way. And they looked at how farming was done, and they said, you know, we're gonna try this organically. We're going to do it this way. And people kind of laughed at them. But 30 years later, you know, we're a billion-dollar cooperative. We're still farmer-owned. We're still farmer-led and with our management team. And so it's working here in rural Wisconsin. We are in, you know, 36 different states. We sell to almost a couple dozen countries. So you can run a business out of rural America. It's got its challenges for sure, but that's how we started, and we've been committed to the rural town that we started in.
Yeah, and Larry, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how McPherson Guitars got started, and, you know, you're a national company selling guitars to you know, world-famous musicians, but based right here in Sparta.
Yeah, you know, we started the company as it is today in 2002 in Sparta. Matt McPherson, the owner, originated that product in 1979, as a Christian musician wanting to create a better instrument himself. So he just started building them himself. But then, you know, his business life went elsewhere. And in 2002, he decided to start McPherson Guitars of today, how it does look different and sound different from the original. But, you know, starting in Sparta, he loved living in Wisconsin. He's from Edina, Minnesota, so he chose this area because his grandmother grew up in Alma Center area, and he loved coming down to visit. You know, and you'd imagine a young boy leaving Minneapolis and getting up to the nice hills and valleys and Alma Center, so that when the opportunity arose to move to Sparta, he jumped all over it. You know, making our product here hasn't been any big issues as far as where we live. You know, UPS delivers product, the postman delivers wood, and that's actually how it comes from Canada. They mail it instead of UPS for whatever reasons. So, you know, we've never had any issues with incoming or outgoing product, and we ship our guitars all over the world. I have two of them going to Thailand next month already. So, you know, so it's not an issue for us in that part. But, you know, we love living here and love the workers we have in Wisconsin.
How has the business maybe changed who you guys are targeting? You know, did you start by, you know, targeting musicians from around the nation and world, or is this something that kind of it grew into, I guess?
Well, that could be a three-hour conversation, to be honest. You know, because I've known Matt for 40 years. But Matt, he had a desire, and I'm sure like our other guests, you know, yeah, you're in business to create, to give the absolute best you can and to build a brand and whatnot. So Matt's desire was to build a unique sounding instrument. There's hundreds of acoustic guitars, and you can get them for $100 and $100,000. You know, they all have six strings. They're all made out of the same woods, but there's ways that you can manipulate the wood through bracing and you know, inside trade secrets that make our product unique. So really, we just went into the let's create the best we can create. Let's do something that no one else is doing and see where it goes. So, yeah, it started off as a fairly high-end product at around $4,000 retail. And over the years, through customer demand, which might sound a little weird, but our base price now for a guitar is $12,000, and that's with nothing unique to it. And that was because people were calling us, hey, I want this guitar, I want your guitar, you know, I want a Rolls Royce, but I want to add this, that, you know, which is strictly aesthetics for the most part. But we were creating these micro masterpieces and selling them for $25,000, $35,000, $40,000, $50,000 per guitar. So it changed our whole, you know, who we're after by them coming to us saying, this is what I want. Well, why should I make $4,000 guitars when I got, you know, 50 people a year saying, I'll give you $50,000 for one of your guitars. So things kind of changed naturally. And, you know, now, because we're in that ultra high-end market around the world, I mean, the two that are going to Taiwan that I mentioned, they're $57,000. But again, what about the, which I get the emails, what about the regular people? You know, and you can't take a, we can't take which, where we are. And I don't want to, you know, make it sound like we are so great or something, but just for, you know, the mental part, if you take a Rolls-Royce product and brand, you know, just the mention of that name puts you in an elite category. And everybody wants a Rolls-Royce, but very few people can afford one, which is similar to our product. But Rolls-Royce isn't going to make a $10,000 car with their logo on it. You know, it's Brad for their brand, and it's not who they spent their lifetime creating. So we started making carbon fiber guitars a few years ago that are in the $2,400 to $3,000 range. It still has McPherson technology. It doesn't compete because it's 100% carbon fiber and not exotic woods. So there's not the handcrafted artwork and whatnot. So they are still getting a lesser Rolls Royce, if you will.
And Tessa, you know, I want to start by having you talk a little bit about your work in looking at rural entrepreneurship. Can you just kind of explain what you've been looking at?
Well, I think you have great examples here in terms of finding examples of the entrepreneurialism that can exist in rural communities. And I think that's not something that people always think about when they think of rural America or rural Wisconsin, that these are very entrepreneurial places. They actually have more proprietors per 1,000 residents than our metro areas. And it's also the case that businesses survive longer on average in rural areas. So the seeds of entrepreneurship are already there. In a lot of ways, we could think of farming as one of the more entrepreneurial occupations out there. So I think these are great examples.
Yeah. When did you start looking at rural entrepreneurship?
I've been studying entrepreneurship now for close to 5 years, but really focusing on rural entrepreneurship since I've been in Wisconsin now for almost four years.
Mm-hmm. What made you interested in this topic?
That probably most more than anything, the slow jobs recovery that we've seen in Wisconsin, and then coming out of the recession, I think, like everybody else, I started thinking about what are the rural and urban issues and how can we understand these economies better, the linkages, the similarities, and the very real and important differences as well.
What has been the difference between rural and urban communities in the sense of how we've recovered from the recession? Is there a difference?
The rural communities in Wisconsin have generally had a less robust jobs recovery than our metro areas. So some of the data I have says we haven't gotten back to full employer, or we haven't fully recovered from all the jobs we lost out of the recession, for example. And I think part of that comes to the different kind of industrial composition between rural and urban areas, and that rural areas have more farming, more agriculture, as well as more manufacturing. And these are two sectors that, again, are great success stories in terms of growing productivity, growing output, but they've been able to do more with less. They're just not the sources of employment that they once were.
That's Tessa Conroy, Economic Development Specialist for the University of Wisconsin Extension, here with us today to talk about the benefits and challenges for businesses operating in rural communities. Also joining us is Larry Klintz from McPherson Guitars in Sparta and Ann O'Connor from Organic Valley in Lafarge. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio and La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. So, you know, we started to look at this issue of a rural-urban divide in the 2016 presidential election, there seemed to be a lot of conversation after that election about, you know, is there a disconnect between the rural and urban populations? And so, you know, I just want to put that question to you, Anne. Do you feel like there is a disconnect between rural and urban communities in our state?
Well, in our state particularly, I think that, you know, human beings tend to categorize themselves, and that's what we do. And so there are things that we live differently, perhaps, in urban and rural places, and there are obvious ways to point to that. There are some other pieces of knowledge that maybe one group or the other has. Specifically, I was talking today with a group of colleagues about how hard it is to help people understand agriculture when so many people who live in urban areas now, and that's the majority of our country, don't really understand agriculture anymore. It used to be that everyone had an uncle or a grandparent or somebody who was, you know, involved in agriculture actively. That's just not the case anymore, and we're moving further and further away from that. The more we get away from farm ownership in this country, we're losing a lot of those farms. So people just don't understand as much as they may have at one point in time. So there's that kind of specialized knowledge, and there are things that city people know and live and breathe every single day that we don't in rural areas. So is there a disconnect? You know, we create disconnects where we create misunderstanding, I think. And I have lots of friends in both rural and urban areas, so I feel like there's a lot of connection as well. There's a lot of ways that we're dependent on each other. Our food comes from rural areas, and that's a really important thing for people to understand. And we have so much that happens in urban areas that affect people in rural areas. You know, it may be slower to come to rural areas, but those kinds of economic lifelines that can exist, the technology that exists in rural areas now allows for that entrepreneurship that Tessa was speaking about, and allows for companies like Organic Valley and others to run major businesses out in, you know, what many people would consider the middle of nowhere.
Has this been something that Organic Valley as a cooperative, as a company, has responded to or maybe been looking at as it's impacted their business?
You bet it is. You know, it's, as I mentioned before, there are some challenges with running a company in a rural setting. So we have about, you know, between 900 and 1,000 employees. Most of them are based here in Wisconsin in two different locations, and some of them are around the country in remote locations. And then we've got about 2,000 farms across 36 different states. So in order to run a company that size, you need talent and ever-growing talent. You know, we've reached $1 billion in 2015, and so we're expanding rapidly. And to keep up with that growth, you've got to bring in talent. And a lot of times that talent is to be found in urban areas. So convincing people to come out to Cashton, Wisconsin, or, you know, Lafarge, Wisconsin, population under 1,000 people, that can really be a challenge. So some of the ways that we've addressed that is by really making sure that our employees are well cared for and they have what they need. So we do things like, you know, make sure that we have health and workout centers, and we have subsidized organic lunches and breakfasts every day, and we have, you know, we have a really great package. We do those kinds of things that, you know, of course people do in urban areas as well, but we are really helping people to understand kind of what are the benefits of living out here, and the cost of living is much lower, and some of the housing that you can afford in these rural areas it's not the kind of housing that you can afford in urban areas, and the space and the, so it's a kind of a cultural shift for people to come and live here, but we see a lot of benefits in that for people. And so those are the ways that we address that. We do videos on kind of our culture and what you'll be signing up for. And we, you know, we think it's pretty exciting. We think it's pretty neat. So we've found that people really do embrace it and love that that difference. But you do have to address it right on, you know, head on. And the other piece that I think is very challenging and an interesting work for our cooperative is that, you know, obviously our farmers are rural people, and we're marketing to urban people. So, you know, when we do something like we did this campaign, an ad campaign a couple of years back called Save the Bros, you know, and it was this kind of tongue-in-cheek, funny set of videos about the bros who work out in gyms and how they really needed to have these protein shakes that were organic and get rid of the junk and the other stuff. And you know, it was really designed for an urban audience. And our farmers were sort of like, huh, that's interesting. And, you know, a lot of them loved it. But that those are the kinds of things that you just have to consider and deal with all the time when you're running a major company in a rural area.
Larry, I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, is there a disconnect between rural and urban communities in our state?
You know, I have to agree with everything that was said as far as trying to get you know, I mean, what we do in my personal part, our guitars are handcrafted. Our workers go through several years of schooling to learn how to build a guitar or repair a guitar, electric, acoustic, or a mandolins, whatever, a stringed instrument. You know, there's no schools right here in Wisconsin that teach that. So when I started the company with Matt in 2002, we had to look elsewhere at the beginning to get some people. And our biggest problem was, you know, they loved the idea of giving the freedom to create a unique piece instead of a mass-produced product. However, the spouses were not too thrilled about leaving Chicago, Oklahoma City, Salt Lake City, where they, you know, have shopping malls and whatnot, and then moving to Sparta, Wisconsin. You know, the workers themselves loved it, but it was about 2 years we started seeing a lot of issues with you know, the workers weren't as happy anymore because home life was not that happy is basically what it boiled down to. So, you know, we offered as much help as we could, financial. You know, we kicked our pay up a lot and started giving them a lot of incentives to let them know, you know, we need you. You know, this is a marriage. We have to work together here. If there's a problem, we need to know what the problem is. So, you know, it took time for us to really find that proper groove to bring those in. But, you know, that I'd say if there's going to be a disconnect, it was taking people that had grown up in the major cities and are used to a specific lifestyle. And though, you know, I would argue we have a better lifestyle where we live. You know, it's no traffic jams. There's no, you know, crazy stuff happening really. But it takes time for them to understand and to, you know, move into our community in a sense and just meet more people and, you know, put their guard down, that sort of thing. But outside of that, which is a big thing, to be honest, you know, we did find the best of the best. And they've been with us for 10, 15 years, some of them. And they have no intention of going anywhere. So, you know, it just took time to move them into our world.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking with regional businesses about how they're bridging the divide between rural and urban communities. We're here with Larry Klentz from McPherson Guitars in Sparta, Ann O'Connor from Organic Valley in Lafarge, and UW Extension Specialist Tessa Conroy from Madison. You know, Tessa, we're hearing from, you know, Organic Valley and McPherson Guitars about how bringing in talent to their businesses was a big issue. And, you know, we've been hearing a lot about how rural communities are losing people. They're having a hard time attracting people to our state in Wisconsin. We're not seeing as many people moving into the state. You know, what kind of research have you done into looking at these trends and how they might affect rural communities?
I think that's an important point that there are several dynamics to think about. One is the flow of people in and out of Wisconsin and then the flow of people to and from rural areas. And I think a lot of rural areas are cases where they're young, single, talented populations are leaving them, and they feel like they need to find a way to recruit those folks back into their communities. And I think that that's a worthy cause. We definitely need our rural communities to have workers for these great businesses, but I also think it's the case that there are a couple different approaches that might work. One is that we call it boomerang migration, that we can try to encourage people to leave and get whatever training that they can't get locally so that they're ready for the jobs when they're ready to move home or back where they grew up, when they maybe have a family or are ready to settle down. So kind of let them go, but encourage them to come back. And I think that part of that strategy is placemaking, making sure that we have communities that are attractive to residents. So what does the school system look like? What does the road structure look like? Are we taking care of our natural amenities? Because this is amenities, again, our rivers, our forests, that these are beautiful features of our rural communities that form a linkage between rural and urban areas, and that urban people want to come visit these great spaces. So I think that's an important component as well. And then another piece that we've seen come up is that sometimes in economic development, we don't think about as much about our older populations, but Wisconsin is a pretty popular destination among kind of retirement or pre-retirement age people. And this is a population of people that has hopefully accumulated some wealth over time, that they have a lot of work experience. So we say that they're high human capital, that oftentimes these people maybe have stepped away from their career, but they're not really ready to stop being productive yet. And so for me, someone who studies entrepreneurship, I look at that population of people and see a lot of potential. And in fact, we are starting to see that show up in the research, that places that have a lot of migration of these kind of older skilled folks also have higher or enhanced entrepreneurial outcomes, more startup activity.
That's interesting, because I think the just kind of the common idea of what entrepreneurship looks like is young people. You know, a lot of times it's associated with tech and startups and that sort of thing. But, you know, you're saying that, you know, entrepreneurship in rural communities could look a lot different than that.
Definitely. And I think it's not uncommon for people to be running home-based businesses. And so they're hard to see. They might not have storefronts the way we're used to. So I think making an effort to find where these businesses might be hiding, to make sure that when we do have new people moving into rural communities, they're integrated into what the community has to offer, that these can be really powerful mechanisms for generating a stronger community with some economic growth.
You know, we're talking about attracting, people to businesses here in our region as a way, as a way to grow businesses and the economy. And, I think that gets at quality of life and what does quality of life look like in rural areas. And, you know, Larry, you mentioned, before the show in conversation that, you know, you really feel like we have a really unique and quality of life here in rural areas that people in urban communities don't have.
You know, quick story. I was on Chicago on some business recently, and while I was talking to the receptionist at the office I was in, I said, "How long does it take you guys to get to work?" And she goes, "Well, first I got to drive to point A to point B, then I got to get on the L, and it's like an hour and a half." I said, "How far away you live?" And she goes, "Oh, about 7 miles." I said, "Well, I live in the Norwalk area. It's 15 miles door to door, and it takes me about 15 minutes. I do see an occasional vehicle at 5:30 in the morning. There's a lot of value in that. A lot of, you don't want to start your day out with an hour and a half of stress before you put in an 8 or 10 hour day, and then another 2 hours to get home. So there's a big value in the quality of life, just having that freedom of the traffic. We have great roads in Wisconsin, so that's, it's not a bad thing either when you want to take a nice drive. The other parts, we've had some people that, employees, had some children, and they chose to work part-time from home if they still could, which we were all about that, and, working with our workers, and whatever they need, we're going to try to work with them. But the biggest issue that we had with that is when they remote in on the computer, because certain areas, I live up in Summit Ridge, in Ridgeville, the Norwalk area. There's no fiber optic, and I've talked to the fiber people, and they said they're in their world, there never will be, because it's not financially, it doesn't make sense when there's a farmhouse here and another one down the road, and it costs them some insane amounts per mile. Say, we'll never recoup our money, no matter what. So they'll never do it. You know, so the people trying to do a regular job, you know, I'm still paying them the same rate. But yet, due to the internet or cell service, which is also spotty, you know, they're not able to give me what I'm paying for. It's no fault of their own. It's just, you know, that is an issue that we just have to adapt to, unfortunately. And we always will. It's just, you know, you can't expect it, like, hit the button and it's right there like you're at work. You know, it's a totally different thing and you just have to be patient. You know, so that is something that I wish we had a better solution because, you know, if someone chooses to start a business at home, you know, a spouse, someone at Fort McCoy, you know, their spouse wants to start a candle company or whatever they do out of their home, they're penalized because of that. You know, they can't get the high-speed internet. There's just no option if they choose to live in certain areas.
Do you see that? So you see that as a barrier to potential entrepreneurship in our region?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, yeah, my wife recently hung up her work clothes, and she worked alongside of me at work. She wants to be a grandma now and stay with the 7 grandkids. So, but still, after working, you know, 16 years, 10-hour days, it's hard just to stop. So she said, well, maybe there's something I can still do at home on the internet. And I said, well, you might want to remember the internet that we have at home, dear, and see how that's going to go. And so she checked into it, and she talked to some other people, and that was the same issue they had. They said, you know, unless you can move to a different location, different building or somewhere, your internet's just too slow to run a proper at-home web business.
Larry Klintz, general manager of McPherson Guitars in Sparta, is here with us today to talk about how regional businesses are impacted by divisions between rural and urban communities in the state. He's joined by Tessa Conroy, a UW Extension specialist from Madison, and Ann O'Connor from Organic Valley in Lafarge. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on how rural businesses will be impacted by future economic and demographic trends. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio and La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the challenges and benefits of national businesses based in rural areas. Like many rural areas of the state, businesses in the Cooley region sometimes face infrastructure or demographic challenges to growing their company. But some of these companies would argue there are plenty of upsides to being based outside of an urban area. Joining us to talk about the benefits and challenges of rural entrepreneurship are Tessa Conroy, Economic Development Specialist for UW Extension, Ann O'Connor, Director of Public Affairs at Organic Valley in Lafarge, and Larry Klintz, General Manager of McPherson Guitar in Sparta. Before the break, we were hearing from Larry about some different infrastructure challenges, specifically broadband, that could really serve as a barrier for rural entrepreneurs. And, you know, Anne, I wonder what your thoughts are on different barriers that Organic Valley or other businesses might be facing to growing their businesses.
Yeah. Well, certainly there are barriers. I think in anywhere you're located, there are barriers to business. Some of the unique challenges that you have in rural settings are, as I mentioned before, drawing people in and creating kind of the culture that they need. You know, we talked a little bit about older people coming out of retirement and doing things in the community. But if you're going to pull in a younger workforce, you need to have some amenities in the region that you're asking people to move to. And so we're very cognizant of that. We try to support efforts in the communities near our our workplaces so that we have great amenities. Where we live, there's theater and bike trails and hiking and skiing and a lot of good food. And that's important in a rural community. It's not that common to find a variety of food options. And that's really important to particularly that, you know, well sought after millennial crowd. And, you know, we try to think about what's going to help people feel engaged and excited to live here. And as Larry was talking about, there's lots of advantages. So we highlight those. You know, one of the projects that we're working on that we're going to be launching later this spring is something called Farm Art. And it's taking on this trend of, it's an urban trend, really, of murals. And people are painting a lot of murals, a lot of art going up in public spaces, a lot of people taking over whole walls and making art. And that's happening in rural settings. And we thought, you know, wouldn't that be cool to try to bridge this divide between the rural and urban communities? And we have also been thinking about, you know, since the election really brought up this, you know, divide, as people are calling it, and it's really highlighting the differences in our worlds. But there's so much there that we have in common. And so we thought, let's take some artists and bring them out to a farm. And they painted a barn, an old barn, and kind of gave it a new life and a new purpose. And we think about that with our farms. You know, we always want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to support a farm and keep it thriving and running well. So this farm art project is really exciting because it takes these different elements of the rural and the urban and it brings them together. And so we're going to be launching a little video series about that later this year. And that was a really exciting project and exciting to see how people come together. And we had a big meal out on this farm and talked about just exactly these issues of how do we bridge that divide? How do we remember that we're really more alike than we are different?
You know, Tessa, Anna's talking about, you know, ways that Organic Valley has been trying to, you know, kind of contribute to the community that they are based in. And, you know, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what these rural businesses mean to the communities that they're based in, you know, how they're impacting the economies and other opportunities for the, you know, community they're around.
I've convinced, hopefully, at least myself, that entrepreneurship is really a promising strategy for our rural communities. And the reason for that is exactly what Anne's talking about, in that when you have businesses kind of grown from within the community rather than looking outside, looking for someone to come in from somewhere else and create a bunch of jobs, when instead that's coming from within the community, I think you get a lot more buy-in and a lot more investment. You have businesses who, business owners who are there because they love the area, and I think that creates a kind of virtuous cycle where they're more likely to give back to the community, and then that's likely to encourage their labor force to stick around, their workers. So I think that this relationship between having workers in the community and businesses investing back in the community is really promising. It's one of the strengths of an entrepreneurial-led development strategy.
Are there things that rural startups, you know, people who are starting a business in rural areas need to be successful? Are there, you know, obviously it's probably dependent on what their business is, but, you know, I wonder if there are kind of overarching things that all startups need.
In general, a lot of startups fail because they're underfinanced. So I think access to capital is a really important issue, particularly in rural areas, and especially since the recession. We've seen small business lending drop off, and it really hasn't come back. And I think that that's come alongside consolidation in the banking sector. So we're seeing a lot of our local community banks go away. And if they're replaced oftentimes by a large commercial bank. So I think the access to finance, do we have banks available in these communities providing financial services, and are they integrated into the community? Do they know their business leaders is something that rural communities should be talking about.
Larry, I wonder if you have ideas on, you know, what rural businesses need to be successful. You know, are there certain things that, you know, can really make a difference in how a business grows?
You know, what I've noticed in, part of my job is also sales of the product, too. And, you know, we travel a lot to, I've been, in 45 different states peddling our product at trade shows and whatnot. But the one thing that, you know, the feedback is where I'm pulling this from, is that people like our company and our product because we're happy. We're very, you know, we're not trying to wheel and deal anybody or you know, do something that's not totally moral and ethical. You know, we want to be honest with people. And, you know, that in any business, I feel that's like the key. Just be real. You know, if you can't do it, tell them you can't do it. And if you can do it, you do it better than anybody else can do it. And, you know, just being honest like that can really you know, you jump some hurdles pretty easy because people know they put their guard down because most people in business, even if it's just an employee, you know, they always, in today's day and age, and maybe not just today's day and age, it could have been, you know, back in the day, but they seem a little guarded. You know, like somebody always wants something from you. And, you know, with Matt's whole business philosophy, and, you know, that's why I work for him because we share this philosophy, is you put people first and the business will take care of itself. For us, it's worked out way better than we ever dreamed it could. But I think that's really, you know, in my eyes, the key is just treating people like people first, let the business take care of itself.
Do you feel like telling that story has become more important in your business?
Oh, absolutely. I had a, it must have been 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, at the NAMM show, which is the biggest music show in the world out in Los Angeles. A gentleman came by, and there's 115,000 people a day there. So, you know, it's crazy. And, you know, we just have our McPherson booth, 30 foot long. I have two musicians that I pull up from Nashville just to entertain people because I can't be everywhere. And my staff can't be everywhere when you got so many people wanting to see and touch your product and ask about it. And it was Sunday afternoon, last day of the show, and this gentleman came up to me in a suit, which isn't really, you know, guitar world, to be honest. You know, we deal with a different crowd. And he came up and he said, so you run this place, don't you? I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, I've been walking by every day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And he said, I've noticed how your booth answers questions no matter who the person is. If there's a child that wants to touch your guitar, you know, it's $10,000, $12,000 guitar. And you take the time to kneel down and put the guitar in his hand and show him a chord or two and put a smile on his face or even play a song with him. And he said, you know, I've traveled, there's 1,850 vendors at this thing. He said, I've been walking it for 3 days. And this guy dealt with pianos. So he said, I got nothing to do with your guitars. But I will have to say you have the happiest booth out of 1,800 and some vendors. He said, I don't know anything about you guys, but I want to be part of your family because of that. You know, so when you hear things like that, it validates how we choose to do things. And it's not, you know, we're not doing this as part of our business plan. It's just who we are as people because music is happy. You know, everybody likes music, some level of it. Even if it's just whistling, you know, you do it to make yourself happy. So when you can translate that anyway, and of all different ages or skill levels, or some that have no skill, can't sing, can't play a guitar, but you know, at least they have an opportunity to meet a artist. You know, a certain musician I'll bring in from a, you know, like Jake Golan or Carrie Underwood or somebody like that they get a meet and greet pass with. You know, we've done things like that to help you know, make a wish, stuff like that too. And again, it's just the same thing. You do the right thing. You pay it forward. And I think in the business world, you know, that is so challenging anymore. Little things like, you know, the Sam Walton Walmart thing, you know, just do the right thing.
Larry Klintz, General Manager of McPherson Guitars in Sparta, is here with us today to talk about the benefits and challenges for businesses in rural communities. Also joining us is Tessa Conroy, UW Extension Specialist from Madison, and Ann O'Connor from Organic Valley in Lafarge. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And, you know, we're talking about the importance of telling the story of rural businesses. And I know that this is also something that Organic Valley has tried to do. You talked about, you know, how showing people kind of how their food is made is important to you guys.
It really is. You know, everybody eats, right? And I agree with Larry so much that you just have to be real about what you're doing. And because if you're not, people see it a mile away, right? And when it comes to food, people are really invested, you know. People want to know more and more so with the new technology and with the instantaneous information that we have available. People are really interested in how their food is produced and where it comes from. And they may not understand it all in every detail, but they want to know, are you doing it right? You know, that's their question. And so I think telling the story of you know, Organic Valley is a pleasure for me because I don't have to make anything up and I don't have to, you know, it's really just people who are very, very dedicated to trying to do something differently in agriculture and say, all right, look, we have this planet that we really care about. We have these people we really care about and we all want really good food. Let's do this the best way that we possibly can. And so when it comes to, you know, creating, you know, highly nutritious food and done it with respect for the environment and for the people who are growing it and for the people who are eating it, you know, Organic Valley really does know how to do that. And anymore, you do have to tell that story pretty clearly because what's happening is everybody is understanding that people want that. They want that story. They want to know that their dollars are going towards supporting something good. Not just for their family, but for the planet. So there's a lot of people making that claim right now, and we can hope that that will just keep on happening, and people will keep moving down that path of doing things so that they're benefiting, you know, all the people and the planet involved in making of our food. But we are every step of the way, and that's kind of what we were founded on. And we're founded to make sure that family farms can survive in this very, very tough environment. Farming's not easy. It's not easy to farm organically. And so we're very committed to creating the best food for people. And telling that story is just what we were talking about before. It's being a good ambassador in your community. It's participating. It's contributing. It's, you know, making sure that your employees and your farmers have what they need. It's making sure that your consumers understand about their food and where it comes from and that they can get what they need from you. So, yeah, telling the story is we're a marketing cooperative. You know, that's our that's what we do is we tell the story of the real family farms that make up Organic Valley, you know, and it's a great story to tell.
And do you feel like elected officials, whether that's state or national, are paying attention to the issues that are important to rural businesses like Organic Valley?
You know, we get a lot of support from Madison and our friends there. So, yes, I do think that I think a lot of the people who are making our policies and thinking about are thinking about the ways that we can do it better. And can they do a better job? Sure they can. I mean, it's the urban communities get a lot of attention because there's more people there and they're, you know, the voices maybe are a little louder and more insistent. But, you know, we've gone down to the Capitol and here in Madison, and we go out to D.C. several times a year and make our case and talk about what it means to be running this business and how it supports family farms across the country. And, you know, we have an average herd size of about 77 cows. So that is not an easy feat, to manage that 2,000 farms across the country with the very small average size. And so we rely on, you know, some of that help. But honestly, the whole organic realm has been a pretty independent, pretty fiercely independent sector. And so we have the National Organic Program that's part of the USDA, and they make the rules around organic, and, you know, it's the highest standard that exists today. So we depend on that National Organic Program to run the program, and we hope for more attention on that program. With the new administration, we're not seeing as much interest as we did in previous administrations. So we're hopeful that we can help educate and help people understand that the organic industry is an independent industry that we have created by an act of Congress after a decade or more of people coming together to create rules for this system. It's now, you know, it's an independent system that doesn't really require a lot of government input, and people, it's the fastest growing segment in the food industry today. So people were really embracing it. They want it. It's an option that's not going away. So we need our policymakers to really understand that so that they can support the organic industry. One of the things that I think is really interesting, there was a study that was done, 2013, I believe, and it was a study that showed that people who run organic farms and concentrated areas, they produce what's called organic hotspots. And in those organic hotspots, people have actually seen the income levels raise in that particular area. And so the research is very interesting around and really worthy of policymakers' look.
Larry, what are your thoughts on whether we're seeing state and national officials paying attention to the issues that matter to rural businesses?
You know, I think they're paying attention to them. It's, you know, bottom line is they're elected officials, and wherever the votes are, that's where they're going to put their focus on. You know, it's human nature. Can't fault them for that. But again, in my world, you know, I haven't had any issues, to be honest. You know, we can build our guitars anywhere, to be honest. You know, as long as I can get the wood in, whether it's UPS or U.S. Mail or FedEx, and as long as I can ship a guitar out or people can fly in. You know, some of our high-end clientele actually fly in because they don't want their product to be shipped anywhere. You know, we have the La Crosse Airport or Madison or wherever, they, you know, sometimes Minneapolis, and they'll drive in. You know, so we haven't had any issues with really being who we are, where we are. But, you know, I think that overall the politicians are listening. It's just, you know, what are they willing to invest in it? You know, everything costs money. And, you know, building better roads or the internet or better cell towers or whatever, someone's got to pay for it. And, you know, we got a great economy right now, but, you know, I'm not going to pay for another cell tower out of my pocket. And that's kind of, you know, they have budgets they have to follow. So I think that's a big part of it. They have to really look at the big picture, you know, the whole state of Wisconsin and all 50 states, and do what's best on average. But, you know, I think they care and I think they listen. It's just, you know, we are who we are and where we are, at least in Sparta. And, you know, we choose to live here. We're not going anywhere. So we're willing to accept maybe a lesser pat on the back, you know, from the big boys, if you will, I guess.
Tessa, I think Larry brings up an interesting idea of, you know, these sorts of investments cost money, and you know, lawmakers have to make the decision to invest that money in rural areas. And I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, what the impacts could be if we don't see these kinds of investments in rural areas.
I think we've already started to see them in terms of some of the challenges that we're seeing with rural health care, for example. The quality of roads, I think, is definitely an issue for our manufacturers. People who are moving their product by road, rail, and air, they need good infrastructure. So I'm hopeful that we'll continue to make those investments and think about rural development as a long-term strategy.
We've been talking with Tessa Conroy, Economic Development Specialist for UW Extension, Larry Klentz, General Manager of McPherson Guitars in Sparta, and Anne O'Connor, Director of Public Affairs at Organic Valley in Lafarge, about how regional businesses are impacted by divisions between rural and urban communities. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.